Imagine two neighboring tenant floors, same building, same grid glitch, an upstream breaker trips at 2 a.m. Floor one ends up dark for about 4 hours. Phones, access systems, HVAC schedules, a handful of server racks, everything down. Tenants are irate. Facilities races the clock, and the incident report is a long, frustrated document. Floor two sees the same upstream event, and within 30 minutes, most critical services are back online. No major tenant disruption. What changed? Small, early power decisions and a little bit of accountability. Stick with me. This episode is all about turning that contrast into practical decision rules you can use today. Before we go deeper, here are three things you can use right now. Say them out loud if it helps. I'll wait. First, define and agree critical loads. Second, match redundancy to downtime tolerance. Third, require testable handover documentation. Those three items are a compact checklist that cuts through a lot of waffle in design meetings. Let me give you the micro case behind that hook. Anonymized, simplified. Two floors, same outage. Floor one relied on basic strip UPS units under desks, and a tenant supplied small generator plan that nobody had validated. Metering was sparse, so the building team didn't know how much load the tenant actually drew. Ownership of the critical loads? Ambiguous. Tenant IT thought facilities owned the UPS, facilities assumed tenants handled it. When the RTEC, there was confusion, manual switching, and a long recovery. 4 hours of downtime and a lot of lost productivity. Floor two, on the other hand, went a different route. Modestly sized UPS capacity covering the defined critical loads, explicit written ownership for each piece of equipment, and a simple documented test that was executed quarterly. The outage still happened, but the handover steps and the UPS gave staff the breathing room to restore services in under 30 minutes. If you're already thinking what caused this to go wrong, the short answer is this cluster: under-metering, mixed tenant loads, and ownership ambiguity. Under-metering hides true demand. Mixed tenant loads, where tenant-provided equipment is mixed on building panels, makes it hard to isolate critical circuits. And when nobody's accountable, maintenance and tests fall through the cracks. Those three root causes show up again and again in the field. Now, let's compare backup strategies without selling products. Tenant UPS versus building UPS is often framed as who pays and who maintains. A heuristic I use: if the load is exclusively tenant-owned and high variability in equipment is expected, tenant-managed UPS makes sense because the tenant will control upgrades. If the load supports shared services, like access control, elevators, or shared Wi-Fi, then building-level UPS or centralized battery capacity is usually preferable to reduce operational surprises. The key is documenting the boundary: what the tenant owns, what the building maintains, and what happens at the transfer point. Generators raise different questions: size, runtime, and philosophy. Oversizing a generator to cover everything forever is tempting, but it carries capital and fuel cost implications and can complicate maintenance. A pragmatic heuristic: size for realistic critical loads plus some growth margin, and pair that with clear runtime targets. Do you need the generator to run indefinitely until utility is restored, or is the goal to bridge a short-term outage until UPS or selective load shedding takes over? Answer that first, then size accordingly. Also, smaller, more frequent tests beat a single annual test that everyone forgets about. What about centralized batteries versus distributed UPS modules? Centralized systems can be more efficient to monitor and maintain, and they simplify building-level control. Distributed UPS at tenant cabinets may be cheaper upfront and offer tenant-level isolation. Heuristic: if your building needs coordinated blackout tolerance for shared systems and you want a single pane of glass for monitoring, centralized makes coordination easier. If you expect high tenant churn and want isolation of responsibility, distributed might be better. Again, match the architecture to operational responsibilities and your staffing model. Across all these choices, testing cadence and documentation are what separate theory from reality. A lot of projects hand off systems with a binder in a brief walkthrough, and that binder goes into a drawer. Require testable handover documentation, a simple test script that anyone can run. defined acceptance criteria, and an owner who attests the test was performed. Quarterly or semi-annual tests for critical loads are a reasonable baseline in many commercial settings. Automated monitoring with alerting short-circuit surprises. When your UPS reports a capacity dip or a generator self-test failure, you want to hear about it before tenants do. Let's be explicit about boundaries here. I am not giving wiring diagrams, nor am I endorsing specific vendors. These are decision heuristics and operational practices. For implementation, sizing conductors, switching gear, protection coordination, bring in a licensed electrician and check local code officials. They will validate the design and the compliance questions that we can't cover from the podcast mic. Okay, time for a short list of repeatable questions you can use in design reviews or owner meetings. Ask 1. Which circuits are legally owned by the tenant and which are building provided? 2. What are the defined critical loads and what's the agreed downtime tolerance for each? 3. How will we test the handover? Who runs the script? How often? And where do test results live? 4. Who monitors the UPS and generator health? And what are the alert thresholds? 5. If we centralize batteries, how do we handle tenant churn and billing for energy capacity? These 5 questions cut to ownership, expectation, and operations. A few realistic trade-off examples. Sometimes adding a modest UPS that covers only comms closets and access control is far cheaper and operationally simpler than upsizing the generator to supply whole floor HVAC. Other times, a tenant with a small lab or compute cluster will need tenant-funded redundancy that they manage themselves. There's no one-size-fits-all answer. There's only the right answer for your risk tolerance, budget, and staffing model. To close, here's your take-home. 1. Write down critical loads and get alignment. 2. Choose redundancy based on downtime tolerance and operational ownership. 3. Require and verify testable handover documentation. If you do those 3 things, you'll reduce the odds of going from a 30-minute recovery to a 4-hour outage when the next grid hiccup happens. If you'd like the checklist and a couple of one-page templates for tenant, building handoff, and test scripts, visit the Built, Wired, and Secured Resource Hub at gdstech.com/bwsresources. Download the episode checklist, adapt it to your site, and, very important, run the tests with your facilities and tenant reps on a calendar. And as always, consult licensed electricians and local code officials before you implement technical work. Thanks for listening. If this episode helped you think about power differently, tell your facilities partner or project lead. Sometimes a 5-minute conversation prevents a 4-hour outage. Built to last. Wired with intention. Secured for the real world.